So what to do with the 416 children taken from their home in a polygamous compound in West Texas? That was the big question yesterday during the first day of hearings in San Angelo. Yesterday's hearing involved more than 100 lawyers packing two courthouses connected by a video link. And it took 11 hours to hear testimony from only three witnesses. Guy Coate is a lawyer with the Texas Bar Association helping to coordinate representation for all these children. He talked about the logistical nightmare on NBC.
The judge has a really Herculean task, but clearly if you gave 1 minute a child, that's 7 hours, and that can't happen.
The hearing resumes today. The state of Texas took custody of the children after getting a phone call from a 16-year-old girl in the compound who claimed to have been forcibly married to a 50-year-old man and then sexually abused, but it's still unclear where this girl is or if her claims are true. And this whole story is full of gray areas like that. Of course, children being abused should be removed from that situation, and the state should step in to prevent future abuse. But what if that so-called abuse is a key part of a religion, even albeit a cultish countercultural religion? And what about those children? Are they better off in foster care than with their mothers who have yet to be proven as child abusers? Rod Dreher is a religion columnist for the Dallas Morning News, and he's been struggling with some of these same questions, and he wrote about them on his blog on beliefnet.com. He joins me now on the line. Hi, Rod.
Good morning.
Good morning. You wrote in your blog that it's been tough for you to address the situation in West Texas. Why?
Boy, it sure has. You know, protecting children from abuse is one of the most important things in the world to me. I did a lot of writing over the past few years about the Catholic sex abuse scandal, which changed me like no other story I've ever covered, not even 9/11. In that case, the refusal of the authorities, the bishops of the Catholic Church, to step in and protect those innocent children from abusers, it was just completely grotesque. But, that said, I've been amazed and moved by some of the blogging I've read by mainstream Mormons, especially this politics professor named Russell Arvin Fox. You know, these guys can't help feeling a chill when they see the state of Texas moving in like this to take those children and break those families up, even if it looks like, as I do believe right now, the cult was certainly up to no good and the state had no other choice.
What are the particular questions that you are struggling with? You say that you are now convinced that the compound, the folks living there, were up to no good. Is there reason to believe otherwise? Are you conflicted about that?
Well, I tell you what I'm conflicted about. I mean, we've had testimonies from people who've left this cult about the forced marriages to quote unquote marriages to young girls are involved in, and how boys who are competitors with the older men for these wives get thrown out of the compound. I mean, it is a sick situation. And yet, I have to say that what these mainstream Mormon bloggers, while not defending that cult, have said is, you know, they look at these fundamentalist Mormons and see their own ancestors of the 19th century before Mormonism gave up polygamy. You know, one blogger said this week, a Southern California lawyer who's a Mormon, he said, "We're just one popular opinion away from being exactly where those folks are." Now, granted, the prohibition in our society against polygamy and, more seriously, adults having sex with minors is rather more significant and weighty than popular opinion, but I take his point. I am a member myself of a Christian church, the Eastern Orthodox Church, that's pretty tiny in the U.S., though it's entirely part of the mainstream. But what should happen if our beliefs and practices offended the Democratic majority someday? And you might remember Tom Wolfe's comment about how the difference between a cult and a religion is political power. Mm-hmm. Well, my religion doesn't have much political power in this country, and we are at the mercy of the majority.
You also write in your blog, you kind of delve into some of these arguments about that have been brought to the fore through this story. And you talk about the issue of marriages between minors, young girls, and older men. And you really raise the question outright. You put it out there. Maybe this isn't so bad. And it's not a moral argument to say that a 14-year-old can't meaningfully consent. And so that's a reason to oppose these kinds of marriages.
Well, I want to be clear. I think that I do support the state law on this, and I think that it is wrong that a 14-year-old can't meaningfully consent. But I do think also that a lot of us in this society haven't really thought about why that is. When I've talked with people about this, I say, well, you know, throughout much of human history and much of our own history, young women, girls have married early, and boys have too. why is it just an arbitrary prejudice that we draw the line at 14 or 16 or 18? I think it's a conversation we need to have, but it's just not enough, or at least it doesn't satisfy me for us to say, well, we can't, 14-year-olds can't get married because the law says they can't get married. That's not reasoning. That's just falling back on legalism.
Has this story made you reconsider your stance on polygamy or how what defines a family?
No, it hasn't made me reconsider that stance, but it has made me reconsider how far the state should go in our under our constitutional order, where we do have religious freedom, to break up the family when a family is engaged in something harmful, certainly harmful to children who are at the mercy of their parents. You know, I think all of us in this country, whether we're religious or not, who are part of a minority group or tradition, we shouldn't be so sanguine when the state steps in and tears families apart, separates mothers from their children and their community. It might be, as I think right now, based on what we know, that the state did the right thing in this circumstance. But let's be clear that the fundamentalist Mormons aren't the only losers in all of this.
Who else loses?
I think all of us who are part of a minority group or a minority religious tradition, because you know it is the case that not all of us share the beliefs of the mainstream of society, and we would like the freedom to live somewhat apart from society. Now, it's true, too, that freedom can't be absolute. You can't have people raping girls and calling it marriage. The larger society has to be able to step in to protect those children. But at the same time, you know, as we saw with the Branch Davidian situation, which is lingering heavily in the minds of people in Texas mm-hmm. during this, you know, sometimes a state can go too far in its zeal to protect children and to clamp down on a minority, unpopular religious group. It can go too far and have tragic consequences.
You mentioned the Branch Davidians. In Texas, there, in the communities that you inhabit, what has been the public reaction? Is there a lot of sympathy for these families, or are people expressing approval for the raid and how the state has handled it?
You know, in general, I think that people are cautiously approving of what the state did, because I really appreciate what the sheriff out there in West Texas said on NPR last week. He said, look, you know, this is we have a constitution in this country. We can't just go in without probable cause. On the other hand, it's now coming out that they can't find this 16-year-old who supposedly set off the raid. And I think people are being kind of shocked, because there is a libertarian tradition here in Texas. People are shocked to see these mothers on TV, these Mormon mothers crying because they've been separated from their children by the power of the state. And I think that this is something that's really getting to people, because people can put themselves in the position of these families. You know, I'm not saying that you should excuse the inexcusable, and if you say, oh, I understand so much, you can easily get into the position of forgiving the unforgivable. You don't want to keep your mind so open that your brain falls out. Nevertheless, this has given us all, as these pictures play out on our TV screens, it's given us all a lot to think about.
Well, it certainly provoked discussion here at our show. Lots of gray space, no definitive answers, a story that we'll be monitoring for a while. We might revisit you, ask you to come back on. Rod Dreher is religion columnist for the Dallas Morning News. He has a blog on beliefnet.com. Hey, Rod, thanks very much for parsing some of these questions. We appreciate it.
Coming up on the Bryant Park Project, Colin Malloy, the lead singer of the Decemberists, is in our studio to perform a couple of songs. It's called A Conversation. That conversation is coming up next.
It's your last day.
The Ramble, too. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.